Broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, welcome to the QR Code, where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. The man you are about to hear from is a man with the world record for the most Detroit tattoos. He is the Q in the QR Code. He goes by the name of Q War.
The voice that you just heard was honest in his intentions. If there's a record for most Detroit tattoos, I'm definitely trying to break that mug. But I don't know what it is, and I definitely don't currently hold it. But that is my brother. He is the R in the QR code. He goes by the name Ramses Ja.
That's me. And we need you to stick around. A little later on in the show, we're going to be revisiting a conversation we had yesterday. Tyler Reddick, the NASCAR driver, whose son, Michael Jordan, interacted with, some people say inappropriately, is addressing Jordan's interaction with his son. So we're going to talk about that. Prior to that, we're going to have some dialogue. The question of the day is, how many years older or younger should you date or marry? For Q-Words Clapback. Today, the topic is Blow the Whistle. We're going to hear from James Baldwin, the great himself. We're going to share our opinions. Donald Trump tries to dodge racism claims at his White House Black History Month event. That seems like a bit of a contradiction, White House Black History Month event in this current administration, but it's there, and we suspect it's there for reasons that are not consistent with what this administration might have us believe. We're going to start the show off talking about Trump's immigration policy, seeing an 80% drop in immigrant jobs and the implications potentially of that 80% drop in immigrant jobs. And of course, we like to start off the show with a feel-good feature, some ebony excellence, if you will. And today's feel-good feature, we're sharing from Billboard. This comes from Gary Trust, Bad Bunny's DTMF, Debi Tira Mas Fotos, hits number one on the Billboard Hot 100, becoming the superstar's second leader on the list and first on his own. He previously reigned with I Like It with Cardi B and J Balvin for a week in July 2018. DTMF blitzes 10-1 on the Hot 100 following Bad Bunny's Super Bowl 60 halftime show spotlight, February 8th in Santa Clara, California, with DTMF the closing song in the set. Notably, Bad Bunny has performed both of his Hot 100 number ones at the midpoint of the NFL championship game. He guessed on I Like It during Shakira's Super Bowl halftime show in 2020. So, yeah, shout out to Bad Bunny, man. I love what's happening in the culture with Bad Bunny since his Super Bowl performance. I already knew that Bad Bunny was a massive star, but America is a tricky place. And to step into the mainstream of the American cultural zeitgeist it's very tough for a person who didn't originally speak English. Now his English is pretty good. And who makes exclusively music in Spanish. Typically, that's kind of for the Latin Grammys and the, you know, those sorts of things. So despite the pushback, despite the forces of this administration, to see Bad Bunny take that number one spot and to have all of us behold the excellence that comes from that island of Puerto Rico that includes heavily the influence of Black people. This is why Puerto Ricans have curly hair and they have tan skin. And of course, the music itself is African music. It's just wonderful to see. So shout out to Bad Bunny for everything. All right. So Trump's immigration policy, sees an 80% drop in immigrant jobs. I don't think that is much of a surprise to anybody that's lived under this administration for the past year. But I think we're going to talk about the implications of that, you know, people are discussing or have been happening already, and the implications that may continue to shape our country moving forward. So this is from Fortune. The contributor is Nick Lichtenberg. All right. A sweeping crackdown on immigration in President Donald Trump's second term, characterized by elevated deportations and strict new visa bans, has precipitated an 80% collapse in net immigration to the U.S., according to a new analysis by Goldman Sachs. The report released February 16th warns the dramatic contraction of the flow of foreign-born workers, which is fundamentally altering the nation's labor supply mathematics and lowering the threshold for job growth needed to maintain economic stability. The increase in productivity from fewer workers leads some, such as Stanford's influential Eric Brynjolfsson, to see a liftoff happening from AI tools, while others see a hinge moment in which big business is preparing to do to white-collar workers in the 2020s what it did to blue-collar workers in the 1990s and massively downsize. This research from Goldman's suggests the economy is learning how to make do without the crucial layer of immigrant labor that fueled the last regime. Indeed, Mercell's report was titled Early Steps Toward Labor Market Stabilization. I hope I said that name right. All right, the crackdown may also be pushing the labor market into the shadows, Mercell found. The report suggests that, quote, stricter immigration enforcement pushes more immigrant workers to shift to jobs that fall outside of the official statistics, unquote. So maybe we work our way backwards here. I'm going to go first here just because I had a couple of thoughts already. So immigrant jobs that fall outside of official statistics means that immigrant lives are harder and there's less things that are above board. These people have less protections, on and on and on. And for some people, a huge segment of the population, I realize that that does not matter to you. You view these people as beneath you and criminal because they have run afoul of a civil order, perhaps. And you have perhaps a distorted view of what life is like as immigrant or specifically immigrant workers in this country. Maybe you don't live in the part of the country where a lot of immigrants come back and forth across the border, or maybe you do. But the implications of this, to me, ensures that, or could conceivably be that, again, for folks that their job now falls outside of official statistics, there's a lot of jobs, there's a lot of ways that people make money that is not, strictly speaking, traceable. People don't report their incomes and they don't report their jobs. And no matter what, people are going to figure out a way to survive. That is something that is innate in all of us. One of the things that we make a case for on this show repeatedly is the phenomenon that takes place when poor people are forced to try to survive. And that's where you have a lot of criminality, like street level crimes, not bad people crimes. It's because these people are poor very often. And so that's one thing to consider in terms of market stabilization, because, you know, there's people that would make an argument the economy is doing great. I know that's really what this administration is trying to push. And their emphasis is on like the Dow and the S&P 500 and, you know, those sorts of things that a lot of normal people, normal Americans who are not invested and don't really care one way or another about the Dow and the stock market and whatever, because they don't feel the effects of that in their personal lives. That's a world away for them. So, you know, for those people, I recognize this is not an argument for you. But for a lot of people, they point to that and say, well, Donald Trump must be doing a good job because the market's up. And if that's all that you care about and you're only looking at those numbers, it's just that simple for you. But the offset in migrant labor, an 80% drop there, it doesn't mean that we've lost cleaners. It doesn't mean that we've lost people to, you know, pick our food out of fields in the Southwest. It doesn't mean that. It means that there's been a shift. And one of the things that, you know, deeper in this article, the possibilities that this article alludes to is that AI is regulating this. And so what ends up happening is there's a shift from people who were comfortably in the middle class, a lot of people that might have voted for Donald Trump, they're going to shift downward economically in terms of the economic stratification of a society. they're going to shift downward, and they're going to inhabit the lower levels of the society, those jobs. And maybe that's what people voted for. They wanted to have a lower status in this country. Maybe that's not what they anticipated. This is the find out portion, as Q might say. But the fact of the matter is that without immigrant labor, that is a phenomenon that is inevitable, because immigrants helped prop up the entire United States economy and society. And then the last point that I want to make here is that the increase in productivity, which again comes from AI, the profit from all of that increase doesn't go to the people that now inhabit the lower levels of society. The profit from that increase in productivity, with more or less the same workforce, that continues to go to the richest 1% and above. So despite an economy doing better, regular people aren't spending more. It's rich people that are spending more, and they're propping up the economy. This is why people on the ground level don't feel the shift in the economy, but they're pointing to that to justify, well, Trump's doing his thing, and Biden had us in a worse fiscal position, which is not true, according to, again, this is Fortune magazine, not Ramses. So I'm not going to pretend like I'm an economist or anything like that, but I'm, you know, a person, a reasonable person, have a reasonable, I think, understanding of the way these things work. And these arguments seem well-founded in my estimation, based on what it is I do know. You know, I have taken several finance classes and economics classes and so forth in order to get my business degree, which is a master's degree, and hanging on my wall. So methinks there might be something to this. Q, your thoughts.
When people say immigrants are taking our jobs, for years that's always been on its face a dog whistle, right? On the surface, it sounds like we're really concerned about the economy and jobs and wages, but the underbelly of that is doing something else, right? It's redirecting real economic pain for people who are going through it, and taking their mind off of who's actually causing that pain and that wage suppression and bad policy and all that, and aiming it at immigrants, right? And the trick is, people won't even ask why are the wages so low and who's actually to blame, because the immigrant's an easy scapegoat, right? Immigrants aren't, they're not setting the wages, they're not outsourcing the jobs, they're not busting up unions. That's not being done by immigrants, but somehow the economy or jobs or whatever gets blamed on Black and brown people who are also poor with you folks. So blaming the system means challenging a power and an infrastructure that we feel like we can't actually challenge. Blaming immigrants keeps the working class people fighting each other and billionaires rich getting richer, right? So this line is recycled over and over again, from Irish to Chinese to Italian to Mexican to Muslim to Black to, you know, new target, same script, doesn't really matter. Every time the data shows the same thing. Immigrants largely fill jobs that others won't or can't do. The wage suppression comes from the top, not the bottom. So when you hear immigrants are taking our jobs, understand what's really being said is, don't look up at us billionaires hoarding all the wealth and resources and keeping you suppressed. Look to your left and your right at your neighbors, because it's their fault, right? Keep the working class divided. The people hoarding the wealth never have to answer for it. That's the most concise response I can give in this amount of time.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. All right. Donald Trump tries to dodge racism claims at his White House Black History Month event. Okay. One of the things that we've done on this show several times, and we will continue to do, is explain why there are Black people that support, passionately support, policies and people and other agendas, politically speaking, that fly in the face of not only the interests of their people, but in the interests of the country at large. And these black people historically have provided a lot of cover for racist policies, specifically anti-black policies. And these people have provided a lot of cover for the individuals behind them. So this event where Donald Trump invited, I think the guest list was maybe 100 people to the White House, mostly black folks there, all of whom agree with Donald Trump. I'm sure Donald Trump can get 100 black people out of 42 and a half million to stand up there and clap for him and say he's doing a great job. But what the result of that is that the people that look at Donald Trump standing with all these black people will say, well, clearly Donald Trump's not racist. Look at all of these black people that he knows. And the reports that Donald Trump would call black women boogers in the Epstein files will never make its way to them because we all live in like news silos, right? The reports that Donald Trump has a significant number of things that are at best, on their best day, they're racist adjacent. And if we're just kind of calling it a spade, it's just flat racist. Most of the stuff is just flat racist. And then when you have a pattern of behavior over decades, you know, it's walking like a duck and it's talking like a duck. However, these events will wash the stink off of him insofar as his base is concerned. Now, the stink I'm referring to specifically is something that we talked about on the show and many people know about. Donald Trump famously posted something on his social media, and it had Barack and Michelle Obama on their faces on the bodies of like apes. And it was like a cartoonish sort of thing on his social media page. Now, people that would push back would say, well, Donald Trump was posting the part about the voting machines and that clip was tacked on to the end. Totally fine. I've made this case on the show before. I'll make it again. At best, that shows that Donald Trump is getting his information from racist sources. In other words, he doesn't have a filter that accounts for the reality of black Americans on the ground in this country. So he's consuming content from racist sources if he has access to that and can just so readily repost that, okay? That's at best. But at worst, and I think that this is true, I'll make my case, is that Donald Trump doesn't care about black people. Okay, he posted it, and if he didn't see it and just posted it, the first thing that you do is you apologize. You say, that was not my intention. That's not what I was just trying to do this. I'm very sorry. I didn't mean to offend anybody. Any decent person, a person with a modicum of decency, would do that. You don't even need decency. You could just tell the truth if that's the truth. Oh, I didn't mean to post that. I'm very sorry. He doesn't have to apologize profusely. He doesn't have to lick anybody's shoes or anything like that, kiss anybody's butt. He doesn't have to do any of that sort of stuff. This man refused to apologize. Then he blamed it on a non-existent staffer. But let's say, for instance, this staffer actually does exist. He then came back and said the staffer wasn't disciplined. So, to me, these people providing cover for that man after he did that. He did that. Was we talked about that? What was that last week? Q.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, and then all these people are so eager to rush there and stand on a stage with him as he insulted their people, refused to apologize for it, and just moves along. No accountability, no consequences, no nothing. And they're providing cover for him. Okay? So there are people that will get up there and do that. Mind you, and for folks that don't know, for folks that haven't followed this, the connection between black people and apes is something that goes all the way back, okay? That was a connection meant to dehumanize black people, right? Primarily based on our skin color, right? Because we have melanin. A lot of creatures in Africa have melanin to protect them from the sun, right? But on the African continent, that's where you'll find the most genetic diversity. You'll find more genetic diversity on the continent of Africa alone than you will anywhere else in the world. Find the tallest people in Africa, you find the shortest people in Africa. You find the smartest people in Africa, you find the, well, they don't measure for that. Neil deGrasse Tyson famously said that. You know, in terms of genetic diversity of our species, one thing that you'll find a lot of is melanin, because it's Africa. You can look on a map and see how dry Africa is, and, you know, the rest of it is done. But a very simple way of dehumanizing this group of people is to say, oh, these people are like monkeys. They ignore the fact that we have full lips and monkeys have very thin lips. You know what I mean? They ignore the fact that, you know, monkeys have actually white skin and brown fur. Right? And you know, in any event, this has been something that black people have had to push back against this whole time. And again, it's meant to attack our intelligence. It's meant to attack our humanity, dehumanize us. It's meant to relegate us to second class citizenship, and has long since been used to do that, to justify everything that was done to black people in this country for, as near as makes no difference, 400 years, over 400 years. And there's not a black person that doesn't know that. But I can point to about 100 of them that will stand on a stage with this man. All right, let me get started. This is from Reuters, the author Bo Erickson. U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday highlighted top black administration officials, rejected accusations of racism, and promised a century more of success for African Americans during a White House celebration marking 100 years of Black History Month. The president's upbeat remarks stood in contrast to criticism of the administration's ongoing efforts to dismantle diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. The event also came nearly 2 weeks after an uproar over a social media post on the president's account that featured a racist depiction of former President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama as apes. The president said he didn't see the clip of the Obamas, blamed a staffer for the post, declined to apologize, and later said no one was disciplined. Trump, who is in his second term, has a history of sharing racist rhetoric. He long promoted the false conspiracy theory that Obama, the president from 2009 to 2017, was not born in the United States. Excuse me. White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt, at a Wednesday briefing, said members of the media have smeared the president as a racist. Following a chant of four more years, the president ended Wednesday's event looking ahead. Quote, this is a very special group of people, unquote. Trump said, goes on to say, so happy Black History Month, happy Black History Year, and happy Black History Century, unquote. Okay, Q.
You know, my mental health was so much better before this man was a regular part of my life.
Amen.
I do not mean that in any way as lighthearted or sarcasm or satire. I'm not joking. I'm not treating this as trivial. I mean, in a very literal way, my life, my mental health, my day-to-day, my peace, my family's safety and well-being were all so much better before this man was the president. And when he lost that election to Joe Biden, I thought we'd be rid of him. And so many people didn't do their jobs, so that when it was time to run again, he was somehow still qualified after inciting an insurrection against the country that he was the president of. That same country elected him again in the same way that they never condemned or got rid of the Confederacy. They even paid reparations to members of the Confederacy and erected statues and fought to keep those statues here. An actual enemy of the country. I've gotten into a worse mental space since I started looking around and realizing that Black people don't all see this the same way. And there was a time in the history of this country where instead of a, 80-something percent disapproval of someone like him, all Black people would have disapproved of someone like him. And Rams, what he does is so obvious. It's not mysterious. It's not clever. It's not inconspicuous. It's not, he's not pulling some cover over people's eyes and tricking them. People are choosing to align themselves with this man who's very outwardly anti-Black people. He does all the anti-Black things and then just simply says, I love Black people. And some Black people say, yeah, he loves Black people. And they show up for things like this to like protect and prop up and speak for him. And once again, you have Trump propping up Black people as shields. And my question is not why does he do that? Because we know why. My question is, why do Black people show up for him in this way? Like, why do any? Right? Because standing next to Black people lets Donald Trump say, I can't be racist. Look at all these Black people that support me or that are my friends or yada, yada. Changing a single thing that materially impacts Black communities, he's never going to do. But he will march his African Americans out to support him. Right? His strategy is clear, optics over outcomes. So that is really easy to reconcile. But why do Black people keep showing up for him? And when you ask that question out loud, you're forced to answer it, or someone will answer it for you. And then you realize none of the answers are actually mysterious. Like I said, none of them, just like his reasons aren't mysterious, neither are the answers to the questions, right? Answer number one is probably the most obvious, and it's access. Being the Black person in the room, in these rooms with these powerful white men, can make somebody feel powerful. And sometimes, almost all the time, they mistake access to those rooms for actual influence. And he, in particular, keeps showing Black person after Black person. Nope. It just meant you can come in the room. It didn't mean you had a voice. It didn't mean you mattered. It didn't mean you had any value. I got to prop you up so I could say I wasn't racist, but that's it. Second is those Black people feel special, they feel exceptional. They're the exception. I made it. So this system must be fair. If I can make it, how come you can't make it? There's no racism anymore. This is a kind of ideology that people accept. Of course, we don't even have to ask. There's incentives, attention, platform, money, proximity to power. Again, being the safe Black person, there's reward in that. Rams and I realized a long time ago, if we wanted to be rich, all we had to do is start a conservative voiced podcast, loudly hailing up how great MAGA is. Trust me, we would be rock stars. And the fourth and saddest is misinformation. This one sucks the worst, man, because this is the part where Rams and I get awards for things, and I'm like, man, we're not doing enough. Because there's a steady diet of narratives that blames Black people for their own struggles. Our culture, instead of the policies that have put us in this position. So you have people voting against their own people, voting against stereotypes that aren't real, and they don't see it as voting against themselves because the narrative has been reshaped. Here's the key point, Rams. Representation without results is camouflage, right? And in this hostile environment, this photo op that he just did is a distraction, and people keep falling for it because the symbolism feels like progress. Those Black people that get invited say, see, we did it. If someone needs Black people as proof they're not anti-Black, You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Stick around. We'll be back more after this.